Hello and welcome to the Rendezvous Show. We're in episode 18. This is the first of a multi-part episode, the first time I've had this, but I had a wonderful interview today with my guest Aurora. And Aurora has run 52 half marathons in 52 weeks, amongst some other things. She's quite dynamic. We had a lot of stuff to say. She made it to The Price is Right. Anyway, I'm doing a little introduction here because we had some problems in recording and we had to start over, and she was a good sport, so here's the interview. Take a listen. Over, I've got Aurora here. We recorded for quite a while and we, you know, the iPad died and we had to start over. So.
But we're going to act like it's brand new.
Brand new? It was a failure. So introduce yourself again, Aurora. It was. I'm going to listen a little bit this time, so I make sure I have everything going. But
okay.
Tell me what's going on.
Hey there, I'm Aurora De Lucia, and that's it. That's me.
And, okay, so I met Aurora when I was running the Rock and Roll Half Marathon in Las Vegas, Nevada. It was a nighttime rock and roll marathon. I was wearing my Will Run for Cupcakes t-shirt.
Mm-hmm. And which I loved.
Yeah. I met a lot of people on that while we were doing it because... Yeah, people love cupcakes. I realized, putting a personalized shirt on you is a good way to meet people. Because I'd done other races and I knew people, but I was kind of alone, except that was when I was at the water stops. But when I met you, we became friends there. I became your Twitter follower.
Yes, I was live tweeting that race. It was the first time I'd ever live tweeted a race.
Yeah, and it was and you love Twitter now.
I love it. I'm a little obsessed with it.
So, all right. One of the things that made me that was so interesting to me, and we really talked a lot about, is that you ended up doing 52 half marathons in 52 weeks.
Yes.
So. I don't know if I can redo this story, but I mean, I can hear it again. I'd love to hear it. I'm sure you've told it before. So how did this happen? How did you start doing 52 marathons in 52 weeks?
So, basically, I found out that I had a weird congenital heart defect in 2009. And it was like this crazy rare thing. They said they were so lucky to catch. And they said it's kind of one of those things that when young people die and nobody knows why, and then in the autopsy it shows up. That was kind of what I had. It's called Wolff-Parkinson-White, if anybody really cares at home.
We didn't talk about this before, but how did you happen upon having this found? If it's so, because, you know, I looked into it a little bit and realized it is really... You don't just, something happens. How did you even get a checkup that made the determination?
Well, it was really embarrassing, but I passed out in a class of mine. I was in college at the time, and I just really wasn't feeling well that day, and I passed out, and then my teacher said, you should probably go to the hospital.
Hey, wow, what a wise teacher.
Yes.
Go to the doctor, suits up.
So I did, and they took an EKG, because I guess that's protocol whenever anybody passes out, and then
and then
after they took it, they kind of went away, and they walked back in, and they said, we're just going to take it again, no big deal, and the way they said it, I knew it was a big deal.
Was it after they ripped off all the tape or before? Because, that hurts, and then if we had to do it again, what a bummer, in the beginning of a long journey of bummer crap to deal with medically, but...
Yeah, wow, I didn't even think about that. It was so long ago. I mean,
no one's asking this question. I got a new question. Love it.
Yeah, and so they took it again, and then they kind of realized something was probably wrong, and that started my long journey in and out of the hospital with different ablations and procedures, and I got a blood clot on my heart, and I don't know, I was kind of in and out, taking pills, getting stuff done, and then finally in March of 2010, I had open heart surgery. And, yeah, it was basically...
Oh, just a little thing called open heart surgery.
Yeah, I don't know. It was okay.
So nonchalant about that. I was reading a lot of your blog and talking about when people were coming. Like, you don't bother visiting me. Well, it's a pain in my ass. Like, a very different attitude from other people. I know we panic. Like, don't leave me alone here. Like, God, just please, can I just have some rest?
Well, it's really... I don't know. It was kind of the first time in my life I'd ever been really, like, I don't know if sick is the right word, but, you know, kind of sick where that's the reason people are paying attention to you. And, I mean, don't get me wrong, because I'm a total attention hog. And, I love for people to constantly pay attention to me. But not for that reason. So it was this, I don't know, it was very weird for me to have people being all like, oh, how are you? Are you okay? Oh,
yeah, no, I get it.
Yeah, it's like I didn't want to be pitied. I wanted people to, you know, I wanted to be singing out on a stage and people cheering for
me. Almost like the only time that I really want someone to be pitied is when I have something like the flu. Like where you're just like, it's like, it's not going to kill you, but you're like, I don't want to get up and get my own soup. Or, you know, where you know, that's where you really want pity, where it's just like mildly inconvenient. But can you know, like, but you want to feed because you know you're gonna be okay, but you want to be dramatic about it. But if you're really having serious shit, I suppose like I don't want to focus on you know how sick I am. I want to focus on getting better. I imagine.
Yeah, I always tell people they can tell how sick I really am because it's inversely proportional to how I act about it.
What hangnails? Yeah.
Yeah.
No, I'm giving. They're give me a new liver. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, exactly. If I have a really small problem, it's like, Daddy, I'm going to die. Can I please just have chicken noodle soup as one last meal?
Exactly. Perfect. I get it. Yeah. I totally get it.
So, yeah, I don't know. Plus, it's weird because when you're in the hospital, all people want to do is take care of you, but you already have this incredible staff of people right. whose job it is to take care of you. So you're kind of like, I don't really need anything.
Just give me 10% of your income while you're working. That would be a great gesture towards yeah. you that you love me. How about 1%? Just pick a like. How much do you really care about me? Would you shave, you know, a penny off of every dollar you make while I'm in the hospital?
Yeah, totally.
Next time, if you have another brand back in, there's the one that Viber go. I'm going to ask that too.
Yeah. Plus, I don't know. Not to just keep talking about the hospital, but it's also really interesting, I think, to see how family members react because it's like it's interesting how sometimes they get so worried, even if they're trying to be strong, and you can kind of hear in my dad's voice, like, oh, yeah, okay, sweetie, everything's going to be fine.
No, you weren't near your family.
No, they were in Ohio, and I was in Boston.
And there was no way for you to, I mean, it's odd to me how, I was, you know, again, I read your blog, and like how nonchalant, and how, like, don't bother coming to my family. Like, if my family would be like, you know, they're in Chicago, be like, go to the hospital in Chicago so that we can all be here, or they'd be here, or whatever, you know?
Well, I mean, I was really happy. It was very fortunate that I happened to get sick in Boston, Massachusetts, or, like, happened to find out I had a weird congenital heart defect in Boston,
in one of the best medical places in the world.
Yeah, exactly, because you don't get any better care than you do out there. And so I was at Mass General, and I had, like, the chief of cardiac surgery working on my case.
Wasn't it, what's his name, from MASH? Wasn't he the chief of thoracic surgery? Charles Winchester or whatever.
I would join in. I've never seen MASH. That's embarrassing to admit.
Don't worry about it. It's not reruns. You should watch one. But anyway,
I should watch it. I hear it's so good. Yeah, no, so I definitely didn't want to leave the great hospital that I happened to get into. And then as far as my family coming out, I just kind of felt like, I mean, for one thing, like I said, my family was just way too nervous. And on the one hand, that was kind of nice because I sort of felt like I had to keep it together.
Yeah, sure. I get that.
But on the other hand, it's like, you know, it's already kind of stressful when you have to take all this time off school and work and whatever. And I just felt like I didn't need, as much as my, people wouldn't try to stress me out, I just didn't want them around because I knew my dad, who was so worried about his little girl, would totally stress me out.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. I can't imagine he wouldn't.
Yeah. Plus, I just felt like it was silly for him to take time off work and spend the money to travel and do all of that because I was kind of the mindset of, like, you're not a cardiac surgeon, so you're not going to really be able to do anything.
You're just going
to
worry and make me worry more. And I mean, yeah, I mean, did they come through for the surgery at all?
No, I didn't. I didn't allow.
I mean, like, for this, I get it for a hanging, but the surgery, like,
I didn't allow my parents to come. I shut that down.
I know. Wow.
Because I don't know, but then
you are strong. Because I could not shut that down. My dad might on her and say, okay, my mom would not, I would not be allowed. She would just do it. She would just be there.
Well, I was really serious about it, way more than I should have been, but I told them, I was just like, look, Mass General says that if you don't want people here, they can put a no visitors order on your room. And I was like, I swear, if you come to Boston, I will do that.
Wow. That's tough.
I don't know.
Are your parents mad at you?
I mean,
did they get over it?
They were a little mad at me, but
imagine.
They're pretty much over it. I think in the end, their feeling was kind of, well, you know, you are the one with the problem, and we just need to respect whatever is going to be best for you. And, you know,
where'd you get these mature parents from?
Well,
most people don't have such mature parents. They really don't.
I mean, it was a journey for them. They still at first were mad, and at first they were like, "Oh, we're coming out there."
Of course they did, because that's what parents do.
Well, and then they did finally, after I'd been released from the hospital and I'd been out for about a week, they were like, okay, at this point, you fly to visit us or we are coming out to see you, period. We've given you space. You've had a week.
Yeah. You got your space. Now, parent time. Well, yeah, you know, they're like, we have a vested interest in you. Like, we went through a lot of crap to get you here. So
yeah, that's true.
We have dibs.
yeah.
Sorry, I was just, that's pretty cool. So then after you, it was about a year after this?
Yeah, it was about a year in total from when I started feeling really sick until I was cleared from open heart surgery to do whatever I felt like doing.
Okay, and then you started running.
Yeah, so I had found running actually just a little bit before
just before they told you not.
Yeah, exactly.
Hey, I love this. Okay, you can't do it anymore.
In May of 2009, I had run my first half marathon.
Mm.
Yeah, exactly. And it was a huge deal for me, and it was just amazing.
Where was it? Which one was it?
It was the 500 Festival in Indianapolis.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, it's my favorite half marathon. It's the one I recommend the most.
Why is it your favorite?
Well, first off, kind of sentimental reasons, it's hard for it not to be, since it was my first.
Sure, sure, sure.
And then a few years later, I did it with my dad, and it was his first.
Okay. But why is it good?
As a race, like, objectively, well, it is pretty flat. But
Chicago's a good one for that. I get it.
But also, I just feel like it's one of the most organized and well-run races. It's like everything from the expo to the day
of. Well, they do races in Indianapolis, right? They have that big one, that 500.
Yeah.
Is it around then?
I think it is in the same month as the Indy 500.
It's like the Indies, it's usually Memorial Day weekend, I think. So is it like in May or June?
I think it's the first weekend of May.
Okay,
every year.
So it's part of the big festivities.
Yeah.
It's probably a good one to gear up for to get ready for the drunken race fans coming at the end of the month. It's like, oh, let's get some healthy racers at the beginning of the month. And they probably do a bike race. They, you know, they do that like little Indy 500 bike race there.
Oh,
so
I didn't even know
it's
about
for,
that.
It's like the colleges do it one.
Oh, cool.
But so maybe it's part of that whole week. That's cool. So.
Yeah. Well, the very best part of it, I think, is that it kind of seems like the entire state of Indiana comes to watch. I just feel like you never are alone on that course.
Well, there's nothing else to do there. Watch corn grow, watch people race.
But yeah, people are just cheering the whole time. And I don't know if like the race director really imparts this to his volunteers or whatever, but it seems like people are always saying your name because your name is on the bib.
Oh, cool.
So it's cool when you're going by and everybody's like,
I wrote mine on mine. I wrote my name on it, so it is amazing. It helps so much when you do it.
Yeah.
Well, as I said, I last year I did... I raced for the first time. I did four half marathons and a marathon for the first, and it was, and I'd never run before, and it's an amazing community, but 52 in 52 weeks.
Yeah.
So how do we get there?
Oh yeah.
we talked about it. Unfortunately, we lost it in the thing. So I'm trying not to over revisit so we can just keep talking, but there's a couple points I think that, so you're a year out or so of your open heart surgery.
Yeah. And so, sorry. So yeah, it was like, I had found running, I loved it. And it was really hard for me to do that first half marathon in the first place because I had gone from basically being a complete couch potato. I mean, when I just kind of decided, I'm going to train for a half marathon, and I couldn't even run half a mile.
Oh, perfect.
I got on the treadmill, and I was like, you know, after half a mile, I literally just stopped, and I was like, I'm going to die.
Yeah, and that's most people's experience with running in general. Do you have half? Yeah, go on. I'm sorry. I'll tell you in a minute.
But then I just thought, you know, if I just keep running a little bit more every week, eventually I'll get there. And so eventually I did. I did that one. Then I had my heart issue. And then I really wanted to get back into running. Mm-hmm. But it was hard because I
had open heart surgery. They cut you open.
Yeah.
That alone would make me hesitate.
Yeah, and I kind of just felt like I worked so hard in the first place. Like, why do I have to start from nothing all over again?
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and so I just had trouble. You know, I had a lot of kind of like financial trouble after I got out of the hospital because, you know, I had taken so much time off work.
Because you weren't born in France where they would have just taken care of it for you. No, they would have taken time to give you money to injure.
Yeah, nice French accent. Yeah.
I don't know which one that was. It might have been Italian. I do a lot of accents. I don't always get them right.
Well, it was good. I liked it. Yeah, and so kind of from 2010 to 2011 was sort of just figuring out my life again and trying to get... Because my lease was kind of running out when I was leaving the hospital, and I decided to just quit school because I was sick of being the heart girl, and I was sick of spending money, and I don't have any more money to go towards anything.
Yeah, that makes sense.
So I moved... It was kind of like when my whole crazy heart thing was over. Also, my life was changing, and it was a weird time. But so when I finally got officially back on my feet and got in a nice apartment and everything was cool, I was like, all right, I gotta concentrate on that health stuff again. And then, you know, I started working out, and I just showed zero patience to myself, and I was constantly trying and then just quitting and then trying and then quitting. And then I finally just decided, I can't live my whole life like this anymore. You know, it's been over a year since I had surgery. I'm not some kind of victim or something. And how long can I really just be like, oh, well, I had a heart issue, you know?
You could. I have friends. You could do it your whole life. You could. People do that all the time. You know, like, I lost a toe. I mean, it's a serious thing, but, like, you know, people will drain that forever, you know, but other people don't. I know a lot of people who actually get it together and do it, and that is the right thing to do, so.
Yeah, I felt like I owed it, but, you know, to all those doctors who had worked so hard.
Yeah, to get back in the game.
Yeah, and also just to myself, because it's, like, it's not a fun life if you're pitying yourself or if you're not living to your true potential.
No, I mean, what's the point? It's bad enough on... bad days when you're like excited about your life. If you're not excited about your life at all and you have bad days, forget about it. You might as well check out. No, I get it.
Yeah.
So, but all right, but still.
So then
52, I mean, that's crazy, right? That's crazy.
Yeah. Well, so basically I signed up for a 5K because I finally just decided I need to do some kind of event because it will remind me how fun it was when I did my first one, and it'll remind me, like, what I'm shooting for, and also it'll make it so that I can't stop until at least 3 miles are over if I do a 5K.
Sure.
So, you know, I did a 5K, and it was really fun, and it did bring back all those memories of how fun it is to just go out and have people cheering and, you know, run through water stops and stuff. And then a 5K turned into another 5K the following weekend, and then those just kind of snowballed, and then I was doing small races every weekend until they were 10Ks or two 5Ks or 10Ks back-to-back, and then my friend was doing a half marathon, and I thought, yeah, I want to do this half marathon with you. So I did it finally, and I was like, oh, yay, back to kind of where I was. I mean,
you're back to half. I mean, most people in the world will never even do one. So, yeah, that is back to where it's incredible to be at that point.
And then, my dad happened to be visiting the following weekend. And so I said, oh, you know, we should do a race. And then I went and did a half marathon. And then, the people at work, somebody at work was saying, you seem to have so much fun racing every weekend. And we like coming back and seeing you so happy and hearing about your adventures every week. You should just do a half marathon every weekend for a year.
Wow.
And I just thought, yeah, no, that's a great idea. Okay, I'll do it.
That's incredible. It's utterly, utterly incredible. And I would say one thing is, like, it wasn't just one race a week. I know this from talking to you. So you had a couple of more than one races in a weekend, though. Tell me about the crazy weekends like that.
Yeah, well, I kind of figured, oh, if I'm going to do this many, I might as well try to really kind of milk it for all it's worth. There are a lot of races that have series and stuff where if you do however many 3 to 10 or whatever races in their series, you get all these special bonus medals. Some are really cool, like as big as your head or whatever. And I just thought, yeah, I should try to get as many bonus medals as I can because who doesn't want all that extra bling?
Right. It's all about the play.
Yeah, but then the way it all fell, that meant that sometimes I had to do two or three races in a weekend, or over Thanksgiving I did four that long weekend.
All right, you did mention that before, and I didn't. I was following your blog at that point, so or Twitter or both or whatever. And what were the races? The four in the weekend? I can't remember right now, but I do remember you doing it. I'm like.
They do this thing, it's called the Quadzuki, I think, and I think for the full, because you can do four full marathons over that weekend, too, if you want. I think that's called the Quadzilla.
My God, Quadzilla. Yeah, that's just crazy people. Yeah. I know a couple of crazy people, runners, but, okay, so what did you, so.
Yeah, it's basically just for crazy people. You can just find it online. It's like the first three are pretty small races, probably 200 or fewer people in each one.
Yeah, because most people aren't that crazy. There's four races in a weekend.
Yeah, and then the final race is the main right. Seattle marathon that they do every year, or the okay. Seattle half.
So what did you do that weekend? How many? What were the lengths of the races you did?
I just did the half marathons each day.
So you did two marathons on the weekend?
Yeah,
four?
Basically. Right.
Oh, yeah, that's way more logical. Way more logical. Oh, my God. Well, that, you know, that builds you a buffer week.
Yeah, well, it was crazy because, I don't know, it seems to me like fall kind of seems to be a really huge marathoning or half marathoning season.
Oh, sure, because it's not too hot.
Right.
Or too cold. Yeah. It's a great time to run.
Yeah, fall and then
spring.
Spring like
tends to be wetter. Spring seems to be wetter, like April is wet.
Yeah.
But we're in California, so it's
so it's all the same to us.
The same, right over, yeah.
Yeah, but so if I had advice for anybody who was going to do it, I would say think about doing it, you know, like a school year, fall to spring,
right.
As opposed to starting
in January. Yeah. Right. Yeah.
Because the fall is killer. So many great races are taking place. And so, I mean, I don't know. On the one hand, it's kind of nice that instead of trying to get them all out of the way in the fall and then ending easier in the spring and summer, it was kind of nice because I sort of amped up to the fall where
oh, yeah,
I did
sure.
all these.
Oh, yeah.
So I don't know, you know.
And
you
did
do it anyway.
And you did the Disney races. How many Disney races did you do?
Yeah, I did three. I did the Disneyland half and the Disney Princess in February, and then I ended the following January.
That's the final. Your final of the year, of the 52 weeks.
Yeah, it just so happened to fall that way. When I was making the schedule, I thought, oh, I should try to end on something big or whatever. And I didn't even make the schedule until I was already two or three in because I was totally flying by the seat of my pants.
Sure. No, there's no like how to do this book because no one's really. Not, I mean, sure. People have it.
Yeah.
It's not common.
Yeah. And so, yeah. And then I just noticed that the Goofy Challenge, which is a half marathon on Saturday and a full marathon on Sunday.
Which is goofy.
Yeah. It fell on the final weekend. And I just thought, yeah, obviously I have to do that.
And didn't you start that off with also like a Donald Duck Dash or something? What was it called?
There was a 5K on Friday. I don't know the official
name. Oh, no.
But
they had like a Donald Duck medal or something. One of those. I was looking at the medal. So wow. So you did three races your final weekend, a 5K warm-up, a half marathon, stretch, and then just sort of cool down with a full marathon.
Yeah, it was so nice. It was great. It was the 20th anniversary of the Disney World Marathon, and so they had these beautiful medals that said something really inspirational, like, all your dreams can come true if you have the courage to pursue them.
And the $175 entry fee.
Yeah, but, you know, it was worth it. It was like, well, it's funny because I try to really tell people that, you know, if they're trying to pick what race they want to do, the Disney races are fun, but you have to know what you're getting into because I view Disney races as kind of like a Disney thing that happens to involve running.
Right.
Instead of a running thing that happens to involve Disney.
Right.
Because a lot of people, it's their first race, and they don't necessarily know all the runner etiquette, and so you get stopped constantly for people.
I can't imagine. I mean, it's just like probably like going to Disneyland, except everyone's going in the same direction all the time, you know, which is a little bit better way to get through Disney, but not much.
Yeah, exactly. So even though I find them to be really fun, it's like I always try to put that little disclaimer on them because people usually, sure. I know people have gotten so frustrated, like especially because coming out of the castle, it's like you've gone to this much thinner road in Disney and then everybody's stopping outside of the castle to try to get their picture.
Oh, right. Oh yeah, of course. Oh, it's Mickey, hey, or whatever.
Yeah.
Princess.
But, it also has stuff that's really fun about it. Like, for instance, around the halfway point of the marathon, they had one of the rides open, and the park wasn't even open to the public yet. And
so
they
you
were
could just jump on the ride?
Yeah, you can just jump on. I think it was Expedition Everest.
Probably, oh, there you go. It probably screws up your time, but who cares, right? We're in Disneyland.
Yeah, I didn't care.
It's not a PR race. I mean, you know, you PR against other Disney races, probably, oh, I did both rides, and I went to the crowd to get my picture taken with the princess, and I got, I ate a cotton candy, and I stopped and I watched the Wonderland Parade, or whatever he has.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, yeah, I feel like as long as you finish a Disney race, you can just call that a success. Call
it. Yes, you did it. I survived, and I didn't stick to anything.
Forever. Yeah.
So, and you ran that with your dad?
He did the 5K with me, and then, yeah, he just did the 5K, and then he came and, like, smart supported man. In the other
right. Hey, I'll be over here at the Disney.
It was great, because Disney uses Powerade instead of Gatorade, but I love Gatorade. So there was my dad waiting for me at mile 19 with Gatorade. A Gatorade.
Yeah, that's, you know, that is a weird thing. Most people would say, what's the difference? Except when you run or do endurance sports and you train with something, you realize, as I said in another race I did, it was different. It tastes differently. You're not used to it. You know when you're really thirsty and you've been training with something and you have your system, it's like, take this. It was one of the water stops on the L.A. half marathon, the rock and roll half, and they were like they used water out of a hose. And I refilled my water bottle and it tasted of chlorine. You could taste tasted like chlorinated water. And people were also, it was like, it almost was getting me sick. And I ended up just dumped it over my head, which was useful as well. But,
yeah.
You know, I was like, oh my God. You know, like you realize, like, you know, potable water, you're poisoning me. You know, people thought it was, oh, it's just water. Like, yeah, it's different. And when you're, it's not like you're taking a quick drink out of the hose and you're in the backyard as opposed to, you know.
Yeah.
In an endurance sport, and you're like, this is my hydration if I don't collapse.
Yeah, totally.
Okay, so you did 52.
Yeah.
And are you still running?
Yeah, I actually won a free entry to a half marathon from one of the expos of the 52 half marathons, and that one was in May, so that was last month, I guess, that I did that.
Oh, where was that?
It was in Ohio.
Okay.
Yeah, and so I kind of was like, oh, do I really want to fly all the way to Ohio? But, you know, yeah, that's where my family lives, so I just went home. And
combo.
Yeah, my dad came out and watched again, so that was really nice.
That's good.
So, yeah.
So, now what? What's your next challenge? Because, I mean, there's a couple things I want to talk to you about, because one of which is you were on The Price is Right.
Yes, childhood dream come true.
Let's talk about that, because that's, oh, you're just bubbling over, so let's... So you've always wanted to be on The Price is Right.
Yes. I mean, but who hasn't, though, right? Like, don't we all watch it? Yeah, you want to win
the
kid?
Grand prize. I want the boat in the house and the car and a trip to Europe.
Yeah, I always dreamed ever since I was a little kid. I wanted to go on The Price is Right, and I wanted to win a car, because I feel like that's the thing you always want.
Sure. I just want to say this, like, The Price is Right films out here, you can go see The Price is Right out here. I think you just need to wait in line. There's tickets. I think you can actually stumble upon it if you're persistent and you get a day. There's, because some days the crowds are different.
Yeah.
Did you have to get tickets in advance or?
Yeah, I got tickets in advance. I mean, I don't know that we had to because it didn't seem super crowded.
No,
that day.
It seems like people can sort of filter in, because I've been by it. It's over in the, you know, in at the CBS studios there, and it's like, okay, you could. Yeah. Like, if you're persistent or you make a little bit of a plan, anybody can go see The Price is Right.
Yeah.
How do they get... Do they literally just pick people out of the crowd?
So, when you're in line...
I mean, I know they do something more than just that, but is it anybody who's there?
I mean, it's technically anybody who's there, kind of, but they do an interview process when you're in line.
They don't want you to be a dud.
Right. So, they're trying to look for people, I think, you know, who maybe are a little bit interesting or who at least they think will be excited on stage.
Right, yeah. This is stupid. Why am I here? Yeah.
Yeah. So, I don't know. I mean, I think judging by stories I've heard and just things I've seen in person, my feeling is that if you really want to get on The Price is Right, A, you have to wear, like, a kind of homemade or, like, not homemade, but personalized shirt, whether or not you make it or you have it, like, professionally printed. And then, preferably, if it has, you know, like, a joke or something that has to do with The Price is Right, they'll like that. I mean, my shirt didn't have anything to do with The Price is Right. It just said 52 half marathons in 52 weeks.
Well, yeah, that's not very impressive, and no one's going to talk to you about that. That or the cupcake one would be the other option. Right? I will stop for cupcakes.
That'd be a great one. Yeah, and I think, you know, if you go with people, it helps because they want to see that you have a group who's also going to cheer. And then, yeah, the other thing is that I've only ever heard or seen them ask two questions in the pre-interview thing, which is, what do you do for a living or where are you from? But the secret is, I don't think they're ever actually asking you either of those questions. What they're really asking you is, like, why are you interesting and why do you deserve to be on The Price is Right? And so you just have to try to secretly get whatever interesting fact you can out immediately. They asked me what I did for a living, and I was like, they don't care about stupid computer stuff.
Right.
So I was like, well, you know, I like to have adventures, and I just did 52 half marathons in 52 weeks, and I just kind of like to live life.
There you go. Oh, wow. She's on an adventure. She's going to be interesting. Which.
So, yeah, right. I don't know. There you have it.
Wow. And what did you just say? When you say, where are you from?
They didn't actually ask me. They just asked me that one question.
Oh, yeah, you're in. So, okay. So, yeah. So you get there. You do this little interview process. Do they filter you in?
Yeah, and then you just kind of like wait for a while, and you watch this really fun video that they show on the screens outside about The Price is Right, and it's like this whole joke thing, because they're telling you the air quotes rules about being there, and they're like, you know, conduct yourself with decorum or whatever, and then they show a montage of people falling
doing
down
crazy
the aisle.
Stuff.
And, yeah. Right. And yeah, so then they filter us in, and the Price is Right theme song is playing.
Ba,
and
it, ba, ba.
Yeah, and it's really cool, and it's weird because it kind of looks smaller than it does on TV.
Definitely. Every set you ever go on, you realize how, like, really?
Right, yeah.
Wow, it looks so much bigger. I mean, Jimmy Kimmel's like a living room. You know, I've been to that. It's like, wow, this is really tiny.
Yeah, and I don't know, they kind of sat us, like, in the corner, and I just didn't really feel like I was going to be called. I don't know, because even in my interview, it was really short, you know, they kind of just asked me that one question, and then they said, who are you here with? And I only had two people with me, and he was just kind of like, okay, and he didn't seem that excited that I only had two people. Like, yeah, and so after they, you know.
How many people can you really come with?
I know, right?
Like, how can I all get off the same day to be at the Price is Right?
Right, I'm like, it's the middle
four,
of the day.
Four, six, maybe? Yeah, it's like, yeah, it's like, people got lives, people.
Yeah, and so I don't know, when they kind of sat us in the corner, like we were in timeout, I just thought, all right, this is not my day, but that's okay, because I've never been to a live taping of The Price is Right, which is silly, because I had lived out here for close to 2 years,
and if you want, you can see anything live, right?
Yeah, and it's like, I love that show, so why had I not gone yet? So I was just happy to finally be there, and then, yeah, it was after the first group of people spun the wheel, when they were looking for, like, the fourth person to come on down, I guess, or I guess seventh or whatever it is, since at first there are four. Anyway, it doesn't matter.
Right.
When it's right after the first group that spun the wheel, they called my name, and I was just...
So what was that like?
I can't, there are just no words, because it was really amazing. Because, well, what's funny is that the sound isn't, like, that great in there, because there's so much cheering and whatever. You can't always hear everything.
Sure.
So they have a guy who stands at the stage who just, like, uncovers on a huge poster board your name, just so that you're sure, since you don't really know what you've heard.
Yeah, right.
So when I thought I heard my name, you know, I looked straight at the poster board, and it really was my name, and I just, it was like an out-of-body experience. I didn't really, you know, because in my head I always thought, oh, if I ever get called for The Price is Right, I'm going to be so cute, I'm going to do something adorable,
right.
But then in actuality it was just like, I couldn't think about doing anything adorable. It was like, just get down there, is this real, what's happening?
Oh my God. Oh my gosh. So not only do you get called down, come on down, you're the next contestant on The Price is Right, or you go down there, and what did you bid on?
And the first thing I bid on was a purse and a wallet.
Nice. Whee! If you go home with that, you know you've had a great, I guess it's better than a sharp stick in the iron, but I don't know.
Yeah.
You probably just, oh, I don't know. So how did you do?
I bid like $799.
For a wallet?
Well, it ended up, I think it was like $1,500.
Jeez, for a wallet and a purse? God. Oh.
But
I remember when you had the thing, it was a dollar or two. Now everything's cost $1,000. You don't know. I haven't watched in a long time. I don't think I could do it. When I was a kid, I know I could figure out how much Rice-A-Roni was, a 12-pack Rice-A-Roni, you know, the toothpaste. And yeah, I had an idea, and I get dumbfounded every time I go to the store about how much stuff costs. Like, really?
I know.
How much do I spend? Every time I go to Target, it's $100. Like no, you go for one thing, it's $100 when you need Target. I don't know what that's about. But.
Yeah, I know.
So,
right?
So you underbid.
Yeah, well, I should have known that the purses and the wallets on The Price is Right, they're always way more than you would ever expect a purse and a wallet to be.
I suppose it would be. I mean, because otherwise, why have them there? Like, oh, $29.72.
Yeah, Yeah. Whee. So it totally, I should have known, but you know, I was just nervous and I was.
And you're the first one when you get called down later. Right. And where were you in the lineup? How does that work? Is it only you're the first one? Oh, whoever's the next person who's gone is the first one. So.
Yeah. So it kind of depends on like who around you gets it right. You know, it's like if the person to your left is the one who goes on stage, then you're in the greatest possible place you could, because then you get to bid last.
Well, the second greatest, because the best place is you got it right in the first place. You went up.
Well, that's a great point. Yes, exactly.
But I understand what you say. So
yeah.
Okay. So.
But I was really happy because the girl who got up, she played for I think a motorcycle or something. But then what was great was I got up on the next round.
So, okay. So, all right. Let's start with you. Yeah, so you go down the next one.
Yeah.
And you, what was the next thing you bid on?
So the next thing was four camcorders, two 3D camcorders, wow. And two normal ones.
Oh, wow. That's a weird how they do that. Like, why would they give you four?
I know.
I mean, hey, it's cool, but jeez.
Yeah. No, it was weird. Well, when they showed me my prizes later, it's called a his and her camcorder set. And so I guess it's for you to have one and your partner or somebody to have one. Well, yeah, that's
unless
what I have two.
Or you're a polygamist. So one for everybody. One for you and your three sister wives.
Well, I guess it's like you each get one set. One for all your 3D videos and one for all
your because everyone's making those all the time. Okay. All right. So that's four. still a weird prize, I think.
I think so, too.
But you bid on this.
Yeah, so I thought that they would be in the vicinity of, like, $1,100 or maybe $1,200. Uh-huh. But I'm a serial underbidder on The Price is Right. I'm always afraid of going over. Like, when I play it at home and yell at my TV. Right. So I knew that about myself. But what was hard is one of the guys in front of me bid $1,200. Okay. And so I'm like, oh, my God, do I bid $1,201 or do I bid $1? Because he's, like, right on the line of what I think it is. So I just, since I knew I usually underbid, I just threw caution to the wind. I said $1,201.
Oh, I bet you it pissed him off too, right?
I'm sure he was so mad.
Because it doesn't happen all the time, but people who know how to play, $1, or they do that, or the highest bid in one more dollar.
Yeah, some people think it's mean to do that.
It is mean to do that, but you know, but it's a game. You're competing. Right. I was on one game. I was on a game show once.
Oh yeah.
It was totally it doesn't matter. It was a thing called it was like a 21 or something. It was a game where they're playing blackjack and you had to answer like pop trivia, and then the questions they're asking I had no idea about. I mean, they're like really? Why don't you ask me something meaningful that I would know? not you know who was Madonna's second ex girlfriend's cousin? You know, something like if you don't read People magazine or The Star, you wouldn't have known. But you still get to compete, but and it's all luck, you know. If you go over 21 because the cards you're pulling, there's no skill to that.
Yeah,
horrible. At least there's some skill involved in The Price is Right, you know.
Yeah, I was really lucky because I when I did get on stage, I played a game where you could definitively win it if you knew the price of the car. Because there are some games where even if you know the prices of the grocery items or whatever, you still have to roll the dice or pick the right random thing.
Right.
Some of it, there just is luck involved. But, you know, some of the games, it's like, if you really know, you can straight up win. Right.
So you bid $1,201. And yes. what was the actual retail price?
$1,260.
Wow. So you were really in that zone. So if you would have gone a higher bidder on wow.
Yeah. Well, and it was so nerve-wracking, too, because I was third to bid that time. So there was one girl after me. So the first guy bid $1,200, and then the girl next to me bid $1,800. And then I bid $1,201, and the girl next to me, it's funny.
Yeah, she could go $1,202.
I was so nervous. And if you watch the tape, you can see it's like I'm shooting daggers at her with my eyes, like, don't you dare. And she bid $1,801. She bid $1,000.
Oh, she thought it was even higher. Oh, yeah. Two meanies and two people who made actual bids.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Did that other guy that you did a $1, did he ever get back on stage?
Oh, you know, it was so sad for him.
Did you toss him one of the hand camcorders?
I should have.
Hey, you get four of them. How many do you need?
Well, if anybody knows where he is, tell him to tweet me and I'll give him one.
There you go. See that? See, that's how we know it was mean, because you just went over going for your prizes. I need my prize.
But
precious, my precious.
I just feel like it's a smart way to play.
Oh, it is a smart way to play. It's totally logical.
Because I get mad at people when they're in a really good spot in bidder's row and they
bid way out of line to be
just like way away from everybody else. I'm like, what are you guys doing?
There are skills involved in this. You should learn them before you come here.
Yeah.
Did you not study the book, the Bible?
I know, right? This is what I'm always asking. But, yeah, what was so sad for that guy is that that was his first time in Contestants Row. Mm-hmm. And then the following time, he was third to bid. He also did a great bid. The last person bid $1 over him. It was also very close to the price. And then she got up, and then the show was over.
There you go.
So I felt really bad for him, because he had such great bids, but no one cared.
So you get up on stage, and then you get up there. Did you jump all over Drew?
I was just kind of in disbelief. I remember him kind of like holding my hands, because I think I didn't know what to do with my hands. I was just moving them.
All right, hold on that. Let's settle down. This is bad. The guy, it goes out of focus. You make me look bad. Okay.
Yeah, well, and then it was funny because we actually talked about the goofy challenge, but they had to cut it because, you know, I
imagine they cut a lot of that stuff. It probably to calm you down and stuff. They have to do stuff to get you in this and edit. It's like it's not running in real time. There's stuff that goes out.
Right, totally. So, yeah, I was like, oh, you know, I saw you at the goofy challenge, but we weren't friends then and now we are. And then he said, yeah, now we are friends. And then he just kind of explained what the goofy challenge was to the audience, right. and then George Gray, the announcer, after we had mentioned my 52 half marathons, he's like, well, you're not gonna have to run anymore.
Oh.
And as soon as he said that, I knew it had to be a car, but there was just that split second between when he said that and when he was like, you know, your brand new car, that I was like, I just in my head was like, say it.
And he did. Yeah. It, oh my gosh.
And then I just fell to the floor.
But you still have to win it.
That's true.
All right, you didn't win it yet. Now this is what you could win. They tease you so badly. So what game did you have to play?
I played a game called the Money Game, where they give you the middle number of the car, and then you have to pick the first two and the last two numbers of the car, and they have 9 choices on the board.
Oh, I know that one. Is it similar to the one where you pick it up and you find half the car on it or something?
Yeah.
Is that the one?
He picks it up. Yeah, and behind it either has a money sign.
You won $11. Or, you know.
Right, exactly.
And how many misses do you get? Like three strikes in your round or something?
There are 4 things on the side, and if you fill all 4, then you're done.
Okay.
Yeah, basically you get 3, because if you get that 4th one,
right,
it's over.
Right, okay.
Yeah.
So what was what kind of car was it?
A Chevy Cruze.
Okay.
Yeah.
So what was the middle number they gave you? Do you remember?
The middle number was 6, I believe.
Okay, and you have to remember this stuff. It's your dream.
Oh, yeah.
Do you remember what the other numbers were?
Oh, I definitely remember the other numbers. The only reason I don't really remember the middle number is
because
it's like, who cares?
Right, right.
Yeah. I'm pretty sure it was 6, though.
But it
was funny because I should have done a little more car research before going on the show. It's like, if your dream is to go on a show and win a car.
And research every car that's out there and the suggested retail price, which is not the car price you're getting. Okay.
Well, they usually only give away, you know, probably like 4 different kinds of cars on the Price is Right. It's all the time.
See how I haven't done
models.
My research?
So I didn't know nearly enough about cars, but when they, when they revealed it, it was really hard for me to find that word "revealed" for some reason.
That's
I was
right.
like, when they revealed it.
Pulled the thingy out of the hoosiers.
Yeah, exactly. It just kind of said $20,000 car, like about $20,000. So the numbers that were around for the first two numbers of the car was 17, 18, or 19. And I was like, I bet it's 19, because I think it's about a $20,000 car. So I guess 19.
That's a good guess nowadays. I remember when, go on. They do like $3,000 car. I was like, what? As a kid. Like, you look now, nothing costs less than $20,000.
I don't know. You know, it's like, that's what you think. But then sometimes I watch Let's Make a Deal, and there's like a $12,000 car.
No, it's not. The Price is Right. Let's Make a Deal. They're not going to give away the good cars on Let's Make a Deal. They may give you a donkey on Let's Make a Deal.
Yeah.
So you're a game show junkie, but go on.
I am obsessed with game shows.
Okay.
But yeah, so I guess 19, and it was right, and I was just so...
Oh, yeah.
You know.
So, wow, one out of the way. That opens you up. You have 4 more choices. Chances.
Yes. I was so happy, and I don't know. I was feeling so many emotions all at once, because on the one hand, I thought, okay, I haven't gotten any in the money column yet, so that's great. And I thought, oh, it's probably not 17 or 18, because... you know, those I think were more meant for like the front of the car. Of right. course, it could have been some horrible trick and they right. couldn't, you right. know. Yeah, 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 yeah. But I wasn't thinking that at the time. So I thought, all right, so basically I kind of have, you know, three numbers out of the way and I think my chances are good. But then also just flying before my eyes was were all the possibilities of me not winning the car. So I guess 96.
Okay, I'm going to have to cut it off right there. We have so much more I was talking with Aurora about. We will be coming back in the next episode, so tune in to hear the next part of the story about how she was on The Price is Right. This has been end of part one. Thanks for listening. I am so sorry, but we had so much to talk about. We went way over our time. This has been The Rendezvous Show. Tune in to us on Twitter, on Spreaker, on SoundCloud, on therendezvousshow.com. And, hey, we'll be back next with more from Aurora de Lucia. Thanks for tuning in.